Okay, there you go.
Excuse me.
The House Committee on Education will come to order. It is Friday, February 19th. We have almost crossed the finish line. It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. If you have a cell phone or other electronic device, please turn it off. And I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1033. Senator Atkinson. Dana, would you give a brief overview,
sure,
please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1033A requires each school campus have at least one automated external defibrillator on the premises. It requires compliance with that requirement on or before January 1st, 2015. You do have a dash A5 amendment, which is a conflict amendment with another AED bill that is going through chambers.
We have it.
So we need to adopt that amendment.
We do.
Great. Senator Atkinson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jason Atkinson, state senator from a large portion of Southern Oregon. I bring this bill to you that has come through the Senate at the request of a constituent of both myself and Representative Maurer, Tina Gotchall. This is an interesting issue, and it would be very improper of me to suggest that this is an original idea. I will say that a colleague of mine, Senator Haas, has done a tremendous amount of work in preparation, not only for this bill, but for similar AED bills. And so it is with that momentum and working with some folks at home and Senator Haas that we bring this bill to you. This bill simply says that we have to have a defibrillator inside of a school. Now, previous sessions and previous legislatures have looked at several issues. Number one is the fiscal. Number two is what does a school mean? And number three, does this really save lives? So let me go in reverse order. Portland Tribune, just February 18th, in an article, talks about an AED saving a man's life in Tigard, and it was very interesting. If I can just quote from it, Madam Chair, we just followed the instructions on the AED machine. The respondent said it was designed that way. We assessed him again, and it worked. It's very simple. It's very easy to understand, and it does save lives. We've had incidences in Josephine County where these were not available, and people had some extreme health difficulty, and we also have examples around the state where these have saved lives. So AEDs are effective. Now, as we move towards the other, in my reverse order, what is a school? Previous legislatures have said, well, do we do this by population? Do you do it by numbers of buildings? Is this an unfunded mandate? How does this look? What we've done just to get this begun is we've narrowed the bill in the Senate to suggest that just one per school campus. Now, obviously, there's some campuses in urban Oregon that probably deserve more than one by the size, but we did narrow it that way. That was a suggestion, actually, that came from a colleague in Douglas County. So that was a good addition. Lastly, and perhaps the most importantly, is the fiscal. If you'll notice on the fiscal summary, there's no fiscal on this, which I wish I had the ability to snap my fingers and have no fiscal on several other very important bills. But the reason why this one is we move the implementation date or the due compliance date till 2015. That allows there to be no fiscal. That also allows two more legislatures to see how it's going and hopefully get full compliance by 2015. The reason we also did that is because I tried to put some very redundant language in statute, which I will readily admit. And the redundant language that we did not add, that I wanted to add, simply suggested that bill such as this school districts could receive community support from various service organizations. The reason I say that is, in Josephine County, 38 of these have been placed in schools all over. And they've been placed by a former member of the Oregon Legislature and Senate President, Brady Adams. Brady's work with several of our local folks, especially Tina, as I've mentioned before, has worked to raise private money to make sure that every kid was covered. And it's worked. It's done very well. oftentimes in the legislature what we do is we prescribe things to people, we put a big fiscal on it, and we say, now go do this. What I've tried to do by moving the end date or the compliance date out further is say, this is good behavior. Please see if you can't come up with the ability for your communities to be involved, and that's actually a better way to do it. So that's the fiscal reason. Let me answer one other potential issue with it, and that is this. People have said, well, it's real difficult in some rural schools to put this, and I represent a rural area, so I was particularly fond of that particular issue myself. And the reason about rural schools that's important is this. Rural schools often do more than just be a schoolhouse. Oftentimes they are the place for various community events. And in the case of one school I'm thinking of in Southern Oregon, it was during a Christmas pageant where one of the parents who was watching in a full gymnasium needed the assistance of a defibrillator, and the defibrillator was there. So that's where it's coming from. It's a small bill. It does come from Southern Oregon. So folks asked me to introduce this for them. I'm very pleased to work in a bipartisan way and also very pleased of the success that Senator Hass has had in previous session. I know everyone here supported the concept, but I brought it to you under the guidelines of prescriptive, moving the date out, narrowing it down to a campus, and also allowing everybody to demonstrate what we can do in Oregon if we get behind something. So with that, Madam Chair, I thank you. I thank the Speaker of the House for talking to him about the bill, and I'd be delighted to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Senator, moving the date out is the answer to 2C, I believe it was, which was the unfunded mandate question?
Yes.
Representative Comp.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. Senator Atkinson, thank you for bringing this to us. We heard the bill from Senator Hass last, is it a year ago, in Veterans Committee, and I asked at that time, well, doesn't this pertain to schools? And it was not inclusive of schools at that time, so much appreciation, because it doesn't matter whether you're 6 or 60. You may well need this at times.
Yeah, I thank you very much for that comment. And again, I want you all to understand, I come from the old school of knowing that in politics you can accomplish anything if you give all the credit away. This is not my bill. But as somebody who's recently used, as recent as 4 months ago, emergency services are very important. We don't actually think about them too much, but as a guy who's ridden in an ambulance twice in the last year and a half, I'll tell you, it's nice to have it around. And in this particular case, I can think of, at least in my own mind, this is a real important thing for rural Oregon. The last thing anybody wants to do, Republican or Democrat, is say, pass an unfunded mandate. And believe me, in my years, now 12, in the legislature, if I go back, I can think of a couple votes in my head that I probably would do over based on that. And I can think of several issues that I probably would have been proud of what I did based on that. I think this issue is slightly different because we've made it easy to adopt, and hopefully we can build on the other 35 counties what's happened in Josephine County.
Thank you, Representative Roblin, and then Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess two things. One, I want to say I really appreciate the bill. I thought it should have been in the last one. I am, as a high school principal of a high school where we did have these defibrillators, I understand that we had an elementary evening program, just like you were talking about, where a grandparent actually died. Went out the back door, no one knew, had a heart attack. So I don't know that this would have helped, but it would have had an opportunity to help if we had that had it there. They didn't find her for a while because she was in a different place. But the idea of not having an instrument that you could that can save lives and is really something that's important. We have one issue that every time we stand up to speak about a bill in our chamber, we have to answer because somebody will always bring it up, and that is why now. And I have some ideas already about why now, but I was just thinking if you had any suggestions to help us with that question, it would be helpful.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative, why now? Is this an economic stimulus bill? No. Does this bill pertain to jobs? No. As a senator very committed to constituent service, I was only given two bills. Even being an old guy, I was only given two bills. And in so given, I did one economic bill, jobs bill, and I did one constituent bill. And the constituents who asked me to do this were not asking for themselves, because their state, their portion of the state was covered. They were doing it out of making a better Oregon. So why now? I have never been one to say, if you don't do this, there'll be blood in the streets and people will die. However, if we don't do this, we might prevent some people from having a need. And so for that reason, I think now is a good time.
Thank you very much.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. Having a few unfunded mandates myself, I am very sensitive to that issue, but my question doesn't revolve on that one. It revolves around training, because I was trying to imagine if I was in that situation. I have no idea how to use it.
Okay.
So, is that a problem?
Yeah.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative, that's actually a major concern for us also, and I apologize I don't have one here. As I read in my opening statement about the Portland Tribune article about the man in Tigard, they didn't know either, but they opened it fairly easy to understand directions, were able to save the man's life. The last thing I think I want to do is get in the business of mandating training, but I will say this. I can think of two instances completely unrelated where the legislature has said this is good citizenship, and people have said, rather than in a restrictive law type of environment regulation, they said, yeah, we'll abide because this is good. Two of them, again, totally unrelated. CPR. People have become compliant with understanding CPR, not by any action of a legislative body in any state or the federal government, but by knowing that it's good. Secondarily, a bill that I'm very interested in, which is conservation of rivers and cleanup. When I introduced a bill, I've been working on this for some time, where we said this is good behavior, which is to get rid of this stuff on Oregon's rivers. There was no penalties. There are several groups that said we need to punish and all that. And we said, no, let's just describe and make it easy. We just described, made it easy. Now it's statewide, and now the rivers are cleaner. So I think what we're trying to do with this is they'll be odd at first, and people have questions. You open the door, and I think we'll teach people how to use it and save lives.
Thank you very much. And I think Representative Springer would like to testify on this bill as well. Are there any further questions for Senator Atkinson? Oh, Representative Monroe.
Wow. She got the first letter right.
You're turning red, madam.
Representative Maurer.
Senator Atkinson, a concern I have is that not every district has a Brady Adams to step up to the plate. And we're very fortunate, and you know, he's a great gentleman. And so the cost for me is a concern when we talk about a campus. I mean, I'm going to make this relevant to us. Grants Pass High School is a perfect example of a campus. You know, big place, lots of people. Lincoln Elementary School is not a big campus, but I mean, I don't know. I'm assuming Lincoln has one now because it's in Grants Pass, and that's where Brady Adams' wife taught. So that makes sense. But what about the one-room schoolhouse, so to speak, or the very small school, and how does that apply? Because I really don't want to make or put an unfunded mandate out in front of those people, where in fact they are stressed, and $1,000 is $1,000, and so a little bit of pushback on that part, and then I have a follow up.
Certainly, Madam Chair, Representative, I actually look at your question. I agree entirely, but I actually look at it backwards. One of my favorite small school in Oregon is the Plush Elementary School, which in a debate we had on the Senate floor about 8 years ago, a fellow senator believed that Plush, Oregon was a typo, and it wasn't. It was a place that I know most of the parents. And we have a little teeny bus that runs between Plush and Adel, where the middle school is and the elementary school, and one bus takes one group of kids to the other and the other to the other and goes twice a day and does that. That small community recently had a tragedy, and a mother of three was killed, and the children were pinned upside down in the car with their mother for hours until help could come. I was visiting some friends, and I was there and have pledged to help them find an ambulance. They had no ambulance. Six members out of a town of 40 went to take EMT training so that they would be trained. This would never happen again, and the community responded. In the case of that little school district where the whole community's only meeting room is the school, I think it makes the most sense. But your comment about the differences in campuses is more a political solution than it is a proper solution. Quite frankly, there's 29 CEOs in the Senate that I was having to be fairly persuasive with. So, that being said, I don't believe that's a perfect definition, but that's what I was able to get through. The unfunded portion of your comment is critical, and the risk for me is this thing falls flat on its face, and 5 years from now, people stick me in the eye and say, Senator Atkinson put an unfunded mandate on schools if no one helps out. That's the gamble I'm taking, and I would hope that in the towns of Irigan or Hermiston or Wallowa or small towns like Elgin or any other the half dozen, that they would have a Brady Adams and that it would be able to happen. Fortunately, we've got two entire full sessions to look at to see if it does work.
Thank you. And a follow-up to that, and this is really not a question, but the training is critical. Because it's not the operation of the device that's important, because it's essentially a three-step process. It's the recognition that, in fact, someone's having going into a cardiac arrest as opposed to a fainting spell, because there are many stories of fainting spells, and you, quite frankly, scare the hell out of somebody and cause a lot of damage if they are not, in fact, having a heart attack. So that training is critical. And the other point is that you know, for kids, you don't use it on a six-year-old without pediatric attenuation pads on the sensors.
Yeah, the pads.
And that's critical. And so when you stick it in elementary school, you better be darn sure that whoever's trained recognizes the age of a child, because that is, again, you can do more damage on the other way. But most of the time, they're pretty... They don't fire unless there is a recognition, but there are always chances that it can fire.
Thank you very much, Senator Atkinson. And now we have Representative Springer would like to add to the testimony. You're welcome to stick around if you'd like.
Thank you.
A comment, Chair, while
yes,
I transition. Four or five years ago, when I was still employed at Woodburn School District as the safety officer, I found that there were a number of grants out there. In fact, we wrote a grant to provide those for our schools rather than looking at encumbering those costs within our budget. And the whatever federal agency that deals with all of our safety stuff generally has opportunities for grants in districts to write for those competitive grants to help out in these situations.
Thank you very much. Representative Spear.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it was a senator yesterday or a couple days ago.
Representative, could you start by introducing yourself for the record?
Well, that just changed my comments. I'm Sherry Springer, representative for House District 17, and it was a couple days ago a senator sat here and said, oh, you're such a scary bunch. And I was just going to say, not really, but anyway, I had absolutely not intended to testify on this bill, and I've actually been going back and forth on this bill a little bit. In last session, we passed a bill that required these in businesses, and I was a no vote. I didn't like the mandate, and I don't like unfunded mandates, and I sit here today before you saying I don't like unfunded mandates. But October 10th, 2001, let me back up. We talk about, Representative Roland, you've talked about the grandparent, and we talk about the adults in the building and how this could assist. But I would encourage us to focus our conversation back to schools and kids. October 10th, 2010, my nephew was at school, and he was just a fine little kiddo, and he died at school. And this equipment very possibly could have saved his life because it was his heart. So I hesitated in sharing that with you for obvious reasons. And I said I don't like unfunded mandates. But we aren't talking about a ton of money. And in comparison, we are talking about kids, not just grandparents and grandpas. We're talking about kids in school. So I would encourage your support of this bill. I would encourage you maybe to bring the conversation back to who are those schools built for. They're built for kids. And what is our primary focus? Keeping them safe at school. Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions for Representative Springer?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Thatcher. You can come up here. I suppose I can ask the question up here. But my question is, I'm just wondering if we, as member of school board, I don't know if anybody out there would know the answer to this question, but are we requiring things like EpiPens? I mean, those are just little things. I just wonder, there's lots of good ideas and good things that everybody should...
Just an open question.
Smaller things, the EpiPens, a lot of times kids come...
They have to have a prescription.
Yeah, they come with their own.
We have them.
Thank you, Representative Springer, for excellent testimony. Mm-hmm. Representative Van Orman.
I have a question for Representative Comp.
Yes, ma'am.
From my experience, our teachers had to have first aid cards and CPR training as well. Is that required for public schools?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And the kids come in multi-languages where we have a high diversity of non-English speakers so that those instructions come in you can ask for those so to make sure that they can be comprehended.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to be heard on Senate Bill 1033A? Before we continue discussion, seeing no further testimony, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1033A and open a work session on Senate Bill 1033A. Representative Springer, with the amendment, please.
Madam Chair, I'd make a motion to adopt the A5 amendment to Senate Bill 1033A.
Representative Springer moves to adopt the A5 amendments to Senate Bill 1033A. Is there any discussion on the amendment, the conflict amendment?
Yep, what is it exactly?
Dana?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it resolves conflicts with Senate Bill 1006, which is another AED-related bill. So just make sure that if both of them passes, that the statutes make sense and that... Yeah. Reflected accurately. And I should indicate that you have a fiscal statement on the amendments and that there is no revenue impact from the amendments.
Representative Springer?
I don't have it in front of me, but I noticed the language earlier in my office. The bill we just passed talked about excluding public schools, and so this is what I saw that amendment. This is what that rectifies.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? No. Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Representative Springer.
Madam Chair, I make a motion that
we move Senate Bill 1033A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Springer moves Senate Bill 1033A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, I'm just going to go out on this big old limb and sound like this big bad bully that just doesn't want to save lives, but I would rather see this be a something strongly encouraged or something. I mean, if there are nonprofits and charitable organizations giving these and donating to the schools, I think, yes, the schools should actively pursue those avenues and get those defibrillators in there. But I'm not comfortable with saying, well, there's no fiscal impact simply because we're, you know, projecting it out far enough so that we don't have to count it. It's still an unfunded mandate if those organizations don't come through. And so I don't feel comfortable with that right now.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I am very conflicted because I respect my senator very much, and I respect, you know, the work that Brady's done in our community. But, again, not every community is blessed with the gentleman that does this kind of thing. And it's, for me, it's not, quite frankly, a Salem Kaiser or even Portland Public School. It's those littler districts that have several small campuses where $1,000, which is the cheapest end, or cheapest side of this equation, that this is going to have an impact. And I would prefer this, the encouragement language, and then see where we are. I'm very conflicted, but I at this point I'm going to have to be a no as an unfunded mandate.
Thank you, Representative. Any Representative Huffman?
I'm not going to repeat everything because I was going to say what Representative Thatcher and Representative Maurer said. I strongly support the concept, but I would support the concept in it being an encouragement to school districts. I can just see Condon and Fossil and Mitchell and others that, you know, would just go, what the heck are you doing to me? We can't even afford X.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Kopp.
I just need to advocate in the other direction. This week, our House chamber did a couple of fundraisers that put $1,000 in a fund for our food drive. I have four daughters that every one of them, whether they are out raising money for National Honor Society, Student Council, the volleyball team, the basketball team, I have never yet seen a student organization that didn't earn a minimum of $500 in a weekend for any fund that they put their heart into. And I believe our children will do this for us if nobody else will.
Representative Van Orman.
Well, I know what it's like to live with an unfunded mandate, but I also know what it's like to take care of people and ensure that people are safe. One of the things that I've been thinking about as we're talking about this is, for me, it's a perfect alliance with your local fire departments, if you have one, and that the firefighters would probably be your key trainers and that they could possibly help with the purchase. So I think in that respect, I could probably support it.
Madam Chair. Representative Springer's in the queue next. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And certainly I respect my colleague's disagreement, and that's completely okay, and obviously I'm not completely unbiased in this decision by any means. And I, like I said, I normally don't support the unfunded mandates. And I also know, sitting on a school board, how many times everybody in this body's heard me say this a dozen times. What the legislature decides, they tell us what to do, and oftentimes how to do it, and that's very frustrating. But also, it's an opportunity. I guarantee you there's principals and there's teachers and superintendents in this school, in this state, that haven't even thought about this issue and really, really talked about it. And this is, for good or bad, an opportunity to bring that to the forefront and start that conversation. I know that
Actually, I just started thinking about it. We have an AED on the wall in my son's school that he attends, but many of these schools, this is a great PTA, PTC kind of thing. I think that there are avenues. When I think of unfunded mandates, I think of, you know, $50,000, $100,000. But I certainly respectfully... I just want to extend to my colleagues, whether they're an aye or a no on this, I certainly respect that and where they're coming from. And 9.5 times out of 10, we're right there together.
Thank you, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not opposed to it. I guess I just need help helping me figure out how, you know, no offense, Representative Comp, but
a
car wash in Ashwood with 17 people for the Ashwood School, which there is one there, would raise $20 on a Saturday. You know, how do we get Lone Rock and Ashwood and because they have schools. So, I mean, if we're saying schools with no carve-outs, I just want to bring in that perspective that, you know, not every town is 400 people and above.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Bonnie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Huffman? No. Representative Call? Aye. Representative Mauer? No. Representative Groblin? Aye. Representative Thatcher? No. Representative Van Landen? Aye. Vice Chair Stringer? Aye. Vice Chair Dembo? Aye. Chair Gelser? Aye.
Having received the required votes, the bill passes. And Representative Springer, would you please carry the bill?
Yes, I would.
All right. Thank you. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1033. And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 987. Colleagues, Senate Bill 987, we talked about the sunset on the pilot education service district. And we agreed at our last meeting, well, two meetings ago, to have some amendments drafted that gave us some options in terms of where to put that. We have several amendments that are available to us, the dash twos, the dash threes, and the dash fours. It is my understanding that I'm going to let Hannah Lye and Ozzie Rose. Is Ozzie here?
Yes, he was.
Straight in.
Oh, there you are. If you could both come up and committee, correct me if I am wrong, but it's my understanding that our intent was to extend the sunset and to do it in a way that did not create chaos by aligning it with the election cycles so that there would not be an expiration of the sunset in the same year that there would be an election, so that there would still be time left on the term of the directors of the board, such that if we ever went back to the old governance model, there was time to draw boundaries and have people file for office in a thoughtful way. Is that the intent of the committee? So given that that is the intent of the committee, is it 2012, 2013, or 2014 that does that for us?
Madam Chairman, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose with the ESD Association, and we would recommend that you use the 2013.
And that's the dash three.
Yes. Our elections, as all school elections, are in odd-numbered years. And if you use 2013 and you don't take different action in 2011, based on the broader discussion that we're all trying to get underway, or 12 if you're still coming back in even-numbered years, everybody would know that this happens in 2013. It tells you what you need to do, by what date you have to rezone, when you have to hold your election, and you'd hold your election as part of the regular county elections for that year. If you end in 2012 or 2014, the ESD would have to call a special election for the county to run. And the difference of whether you sunset in one, two, or three of those years isn't that important, I don't think. And so the meshing this to try to deal with it, if you choose to let the sunset operate, I think is important, and I recommend that you use the dash three amendments.
Thank you. And are there questions for, we have Hannah Lai from Legislative Council. It's good to see you here this afternoon. Questions from the committee? Representative Huffman?
Just to clarify, we haven't changed anything. It is still optional to districts. Is that correct? Which governance model they want to adopt,
it's the pilot. It extends the current pilots. It allows them to continue in the process that they have used. For example.
Right, but there wasn't there verbiage in the bill that allowed
new ones to come in.
That is gone.
Okay, so it's only dealing with the pilots. Okay, great. Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Springer.
I hesitate in asking this as I'm trying to manipulate my OneNote here. Which amendments are we looking at this time?
The dash three.
Which we do have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the 2013.
I know it's on here. I can't find it.
Representative Roblin.
I was just trying to make sure it is the dash threes as well, and that the dash threes do allow it to go out to 2013. And it leaves the board members still the same board members, basically. So we don't do anything. We don't do any changes. We don't start an election process or any of that.
Excuse me, Ozzie Rose again.
Right.
The current law, the board members that exist in the two ESDs, their terms expire this year, and they will have to be reelected.
Okay.
And I believe it's set up so that after they're reelected, they'll draw by lot, and part of them will be 2-year terms, part of them will be 3-year terms to get out.
Okay.
And one of the pilots came back to you in 2007 and said they didn't want to wait until 2010 and have all their board members.
Right, so
in 2008, they, by law, declared you have to run again at this point to get them staggered.
Okay.
So they're not affected by this. The other two are affected by it. And, yes, all their board members will have to be reelected between now and June 30th.
I'm good.
Iverson
Gimbo. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry I had to step out. Ozzie, so what is the problem with 2012 with the second option?
If you do 2012,
years, they had 2010,
your board members expire 2012. The next regular election for board members is 2013. And so you would have to call a special election in 2012 run by the county. You'd have to rezone, et cetera, and we're suggesting that if you're going to do if you do something else and decide to keep the pilots, this is kind of an irrelevant discussion. But if you let it go back to the old system, doing it in an odd number of years makes it work smoother.
Hmm. So just a follow-up. So the elections are in May of the even-numbered year?
The elections for the two or three pilots, yes, they are in the even numbered years because you change the when you establish them, you put a 2010 expiration. All the other ESDs and school districts vote in the odd numbered year.
Now I understand. Thank you. I was thinking of the norm, not the exception.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Representative Comp.
Well, no, Representative Denborough and I were trying to do the calendar calculation, but I think you've clarified it very well.
Madam Chair and the two representatives, I sat down with all three amendments side by side and read them carefully and drew like you used to diagram sentences when you went to school in the old days.
The good old days.
And I believe this is the correct thing to do.
Thank you very much. We do have one other person that is signed up to testify. We don't have a public hearing. I've not intended to open a public hearing today, but we are scheduled for a public hearing. So I will call up PJ Schaefer. Thank you for coming, Mr. Schaefer. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. I'm T.J. Schaefer. I'm a parent in this area, which means that Willamette Education Service District is the education service district designated for this area. I have a very brief comment to make regarding it, but perhaps it would be more understandable if I explain why I'm here. In the last several months, if you've read the Statesman Journal, you know, we've had some very catastrophic events occurring surrounding the management of Willamette Education Service District, which discharged its superintendent. But in addition to that, the reaction of the people on the board has been very disappointing. I know of only one person that has spoken favorably of that board, and everybody else that I know whom I have talked with is angry, basically, with that board, and angry with its failure to accept and accept responsibility and be accountable for what's happened there. My comment here today is to observe that the more direct the relationship is between management and the objects and the people that are managed, the more effective it is. You have more accountability, more responsibility in that kind of an arrangement. When you have an education service district that's administratively, politically removed from the local school itself, accountability suffers, and I think we've had that experience demonstrated to us in the recent months here in this area. So my request would be that we end this experiment as expediently and as quickly as we can and make sure that the monies, the responsibility, and the accountability gets vested in a local school board who are most close to the problems and are most able to deal with what needs to be a remedy. So that's my whole message today.
Thank you very much for coming. And I think if I reflect on the conversation that we had here on Monday, one of the reasons that the bill has been amended in its original form, it simply would have changed these from being pilot programs to being permanent types of programs. And I think we had a discussion where there were many members who were concerned, Willamette ESD in particular, I think weighs heavily on the minds of folks as an example of where this experiment perhaps has not worked well, and with concern about the accountability of board members to their communities. I think we also learned that because of the late date at which we're considering this and the inability to redraw political boundaries and get people signed up to run for the board in time for the filing deadline, which is close upon us, that we really do need to move forward with a short extension, and that's why you see a very short extension here where the next legislature will have to deal with this issue again if it's to continue.
Well, thank you, Chair Gelser. I appreciate that. I would like to mention also that this is not the only education service district that's gotten into serious trouble since the legislature last met. There have been very serious problems generally of a fiscal nature. And so I, for one, would be very happy to see this thing concluded in a more responsible way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any comments or questions? Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 987 and open a work session on Senate Bill 987. Representative Dimbrough.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 987.
Representative Dimbrough moves to adopt the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 987. Colleagues, this is the amendment that Representative Maurer brought the other week that has to do with employees during a merger.
Day. We haven't been here that long.
We brought the other day.
It was 2 days ago.
How long do you think February is?
It's feeling long.
Very, very long.
I'm just going by like that.
Groundhog was on to something this year.
Madam Chair, and it has to do with what you said.
I'm sorry.
What?
Can you finish that thought of your sentence? Madam. And it has to do with...
Oh, yes.
Then
I'm going to let Representative Maurer speak to his own amendment as part of opening the formal question of, is there any further discussion? Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The bill uses language that exists now when a school district combines, that brings collective bargaining agreements, vacation, sick time forward into a new administrative structure. It transfers that from a school district, so now it applies also to an ESD. And essentially that you don't break collective bargaining agreements, that people don't lose seniority, that vacation time is not lost.
Yeah.
And it doesn't apply to NESD, and it should. And this is a vehicle that can allow it to happen.
Is there any further discussion? Was that discussion, or that was just...
No, I just said on the amendment.
On the amendment. Any further discussion on that amendment?
Madam Chair, could I indicate for the committee that that amendment has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact?
Are you hoping that is the case?
So is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, so ordered. And Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 987.
Representative Dembro moves the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 987. Is there any discussion of the Dash 3 amendments? Seeing none, is there any objection to the Dash 3 amendments? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Dembro.
Chair Gelzer, I move Senate Bill 987 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dembro moves Senate Bill 987 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the bill, Representative Roblin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The testimony we just had about the ESD here in Willamette, you know, is something that I think we need to take into effect, and that's why I think it's really good to have this short time so we can really do it. But I just want to make it clear that from my perspective, we have to really have a conversation about ESDs and this whole thing in the next session. We tried this experiment because ESDs had a different structure, and we had a real problem over in Eastern Oregon a few years ago. And the legislature, it seems, every time there's a problem that pops up here, we try to solve it with a solution that may or may not have anything to do with what caused the problem. So figuring out what the real problem is would be really helpful, whatever that structure might be and whatever. And I think we heard from Ozzie about at least a conversation that's going on about what kinds of things should we be doing regionally. I think there is a broader discussion that needs to take place about the organization of regional provided services and how all kids get what they need, because if you go around and look at our ESDs, each one provides a slightly different thing. Now, maybe that's because that's what the regional differences are. It may or may not be. There may be kids in each of those districts that aren't getting what they should be getting if all regional services are being provided. And I hope we, as a legislature, have the fortitude to have those real discussions between now and then and during the session, so we try to come up with a system that works as opposed to patching the system over and over again with little fixes that may or may not have anything to do with the final solution. So that's, I'm okay with this bill, but I just think we need to do that.
Thank you very much. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. I, too, beg everybody's indulgence, because the biggest concern I have is based on accountability. I have managed a multi-million dollar program, multi-funded. I have reviewed financial systems of other programs. I promised Representative Huffman I wouldn't speak about where I used to work. And I must admit that in reading the audit of the Willamette ESD, I have never, ever seen such a mess. I am in absolute shock. I cannot believe that an institution where people have degrees can be so irresponsible. But I have to also say that it's not just with ESDs. We do have some school districts that have been exposed of financial mismanagement. And for me, it's a huge concern, because when we're talking about spending money, saving money, I cannot believe that there are some individuals who don't understand what it means to take care of the public's money. And I just feel that this is just another problem that we have, and I, at some point in time, I'm hoping that there's something that we can do to deal with that particular issue.
Thank you very much. Seeing no further discussion, Bonnie, is there any further discussion? I see no further discussion. Bonnie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kopp?
Aye.
Representative Mellor?
Aye.
Representative Roper?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Benda?
Aye. Chair Gelser?
Aye. Having received the required votes, the bill moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Who would like to carry this bill? Representative Comp, would you like to carry?
I'd be happy to do that.
Representative Comp will carry the bill, and I will close the work session.
The chair. Only if Ozzy Rosebud's my speech.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 987 and open a short public hearing on Senate Bill 988. And just for the disclosure to the committee, I have had at least three different requests for amendments on Senate Bill 988, requests for notes to have amendments written to this bill that has a fairly broad relating clause. I've turned down all of those because we are at Friday. Sine die is imminent. Senate Bill 988 has a number of things that are in it. To pass it and move it across the floor on the other side would require concurrence with the Senate. And if there was anything that raised any question, it could make it very difficult for us to planfully get the whole bill across the finish line. That said, the rules of this committee are such that certainly if any of you have amendments you wish to offer, of course I will accept those motions and we'll have that conversation. Dana, would you give us a rundown? Senate Bill 988 does four pretty distinct things. Would you give us the overview, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 988 specifies that children who are foreign exchange students and reside in a school district-operated dormitory are considered residents of that school district. This would apply for the next two school years. It also includes in the school district, quote-unquote, in the definition of public agency for purposes of financing treatment works. It adds Oregon pre-kindergarten program providers to a Head Start pilot project to implement health literacy. And it permits a school district or education service district to enter into a funds diversion agreement with the Department of Education to make debt service payments on qualified revenue bonds. It declares an emergency and would take effect upon passage.
Thank you very much. And I would invite Ken Armstrong, Jim Green, and Mike Carroll, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Armstrong, represent Seattle Northwest Securities Corporation. It is a beautiful Friday afternoon. The Willamette students are playing hacky sack in the yard, so I'm going to try and keep this as brief as I can for you. My piece of this bill is in Section 8, which is on page 5. And essentially what we're doing here and what the Senate unanimously agreed to is to allow schools to take advantage of a recently changed federal program, or a recently adopted federal program, I should say, that allows for qualified school construction bonds. This was done early last year, and it effectively has the federal government subsidizing the interest on bonds by means of a tax credit. So the effect of it is that a school district is able to do capital improvement projects a little bit cheaper than it might otherwise be able to do. What we've seen, however, is primarily large school districts have been the ones able to take advantage of it rather than the smaller ones. And the smaller ones, I mean, are really quite small. $100,000 project, $500,000 project, not very large, that typically would not be able to stand on its own for a bond issue. So our language in Section 8 allows school districts to join together, pool themselves, and issue a broader bond issue with a better rating than they would otherwise be able to get. We've worked very closely with the Oregon School Boards Association on this, with the Department of Education, and also with the Treasurer's Office, worked through the language that you see in Section 8. We've got agreement. We think this is going to be a very beneficial solution to some of the capital improvement needs for the state of Oregon. Just to put it in some perspective for you, this last year, the first year of the program in 2009, Oregon's allocation was about $113 million. So it's not a huge program available to the state, but it is something, and it really does do some good things for smaller districts. We're expecting a similar allocation for 2010, and we think this is good policy. We hope you agree, and I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. And Mr. Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jim Green, representing the Oregon Small Schools Association, and today I'm here to talk to you about sections 1 through 4. Actually, I'm here to answer questions. We brought Mike Carroll with us. Mike Carroll is currently the superintendent of the North Central ESD in Condon, but prior to his engagement at the North Central ESD, he was the superintendent at Mitchell School District for over 20 years, where one of these dormitories is located. We're talking about the foreign students that live in the dormitories for residential purposes, and Mike's here to answer questions and talk about those programs if any of you have any questions at all.
Thank you. Mr. Carroll.
Madam Chair and committee members, I just want to take a couple minutes to give you a real brief overview of where we are. And Mitchell started the dorm because we saw in our community a need for it. A number of grandparents and aunts and uncles were having students come from larger school districts where they were having problems, come to live with them so that they could take advantage of being in a smaller school district and the smaller class size. And that worked for a number of them. And so we decided, well, that this was something that might be an educational advantage both for students around the state of Oregon and for our students. And it eventually evolved into where we had a few organizations which sponsor foreign exchange students come and ask if we might be able to put some students in there. All of these organizations that are used by all of these school districts are CSIET approved, which is the Council for Standards on International Educational Travel, which works directly with the State Department. So it's not a fly-by-night kind of just go pick out some kids and pull them into the district. The program has worked for these districts, and I think if you just take a second and think about it, you can think of numerous reasons why having foreign exchange students in the classroom and in the community works, especially for small rural communities. To have European students in there when you're talking about World War I and World War II in history class, or to have South American students in when you're talking about the geography, when you're talking about different things that have happened in Asia, whether it be China or the difference between South and Korea, all of those things are just so enriched by having these foreign exchange students in a small school, especially where it's a kind of a situation where you might have one Hispanic student, maybe one African American, or one Native American student in a district, and having all this extra input from other cultures is just extremely valuable. And so I strongly encourage you to allow this to go through and at least give us another year and a half to try and work out what might be best as far as this goes in the future. And I'm glad to try and answer any questions that you have.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike, can you give me an idea? And good to see you, by the way. Thanks for driving over. Can you give me an idea, Mitchell, for example? What will this bill do exactly for Mitchell? How will it allow the program to continue?
Madam Chair, Representative Huffman, well, Mitchell, for instance, has 11 students, and so this bill affects this year and next year, basically. So they've already had these kids and funded this and put money into it for this year, and so to jerk that money out from them right now would be a real hardship. It gives them the opportunity to plan ahead and think about maybe some alternatives, to work with other people who are trying to do things with the small school direction, which also sunsets in 2011, and see if that can all be worked out so that there are no real big financial burdens, and that the cultural part of it and the educational part of it remains as long as possible. I think those are the two things that really would affect Mitchell or any of these schools, is that they would lose that cultural part, and they also would be losing financial part that they have already spent. And we all know that all school districts are in a rather difficult time right now for financials.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. Mike, would you say the foreign exchange portion of this and saving that is really the pretty much the salvation for a small school like Mitchell?
I would say that there are Mitchell's probably on the borderline where they might be able to work without this, because they do have students from Oregon in their dorm as well, and they have always worked hard to keep some students from Oregon, and would work to put those, to try and replace as many of those students as they could with Oregon students. But there are other schools which are smaller that, yes, I think it would definitely be a make or break sort of situation.
Thank you.
Representative Van Orman.
Representative Maurer was before me.
but I might say his name wrong.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I just have a question. So currently, if you have somebody from Southeast Portland, they qualify and you get reimbursement for that student. What we're really talking about is just the foreign exchange student.
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chairman. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Representative Mallard.
Thanks, Madam Chair. This is really interesting. I did not know this whole thing existed until a couple weeks ago, and I was quite frankly stunned. Grants Pass High School is limited to 1% of their student population being foreign exchange students. With Grants Pass, it's currently 17. I think they have 19, and I'm not sure if they got an exclusion or exception, or Grants Pass is just eating two kids. I've got two in my house that are foreign exchange students this year, for the whole year. The whole year.
It's fun.
And we love them both. But the question is, if this is about keeping a school afloat by importing students, wow. Mm-hmm. I totally understand on their side saying we're going to use this, but this is wow. I'm not sure Oregon taxpayers signed up for this one.
Madam Chair, Representative Maurer, if I could address that issue, because this was school districts that had a dormitory prior to, I believe it was 2005, and maybe your committee administrator would correct me with that, there was a change in the law for the definition of resident student. And inadvertently, this got left out. Students that are in your school district in Grants Pass, living with you and your family, they're considered residents of the school district because they're with someone in a parental relationship. The issue here is they have a dorm, and there is, under the law as it currently sits, no one there in quote-unquote a parental relationship. This just allows this to go back to the way it was, and if you'll note, this sunsets July 2011. This is only to get through this next biennium, and as you know, in the state school fund formula, there is a sunset in there for the small remote school correction. So we are going to have a larger debate about how we fund small remote necessary schools. I don't believe, and I'll let Mike talk about this, I don't think it was a way they went out and said, we need these kids in order to stay afloat. It was, these kids came to their community through these organizations that Mike talked about because it was an opportunity for them to come to Oregon and see a different part of Oregon than what they normally would see. This is merely trying to correct an issue that was dropped, I believe, in the 05, maybe the 07 session on the definition of a resident student, and it does sunset. We are going to have a larger debate. And just for your information, we're talking 6 school districts, 60 kids. It's less than, I believe, $325,000 statewide.
Follow up, Representative?
But, you know, and I accept that, and, you know, I certainly don't want to put a district that's been, going along, and then we jerk the rug out from under him without having any sort of a glide path into a new, and so I will accept it, but that conversation going forward, like, that does need to be brought up, because, you know, it does beg a larger question, I think.
And Madam Chair, Representative Mallard, that conversation you can count on will occur.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as follow-up, the language you say was dropped inadvertently. The language was in there before. These people were considered residents.
Madam Chair, Representative Parker, yes. It was in the state school fund formula. When we did a change, I want to say back in 2005, Representative, don't quote me on that. We changed that definition of resident pupil and dropped the language that covered these kids before.
Okay, thank you. And one more question.
Sure, follow up.
I'm curious about funding that comes from these organizations that introduce the kids to the community when they're coming from abroad. Is there any funding that travels with them to the school district?
No.
No.
That's a non-brand.
No. Wrong.
Madam Chair, it's just, they are just like any other foreign exchange student in any other school district. Just the difference is just where they reside.
Mm-hmm.
And as Mr. Green has mentioned, it's the definition of parental.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions, Representative Dembro?
Thank you, Madam Chair. How are we doing on the other side of the exchange, you know, sending district kids out to other countries? Are we seeing a real exchange, or is it all one-sided? Or primarily one-sided, would you say?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Dembro. My experience is it's more people coming than people leaving.
Substantially more?
I would say substantially more, but I think that's true both in small and large schools. I think it has a lot to do with the educational system in the different school districts, or different countries, and the fact that the value that other countries put on speaking English versus the value that we put on speaking a foreign language. Most of them come over here for that very reason. Many of the European students lose a whole year of school to come over here. Their credits don't count, except they might get some English credit. But they come over here so that they can improve and be competent English speakers, because their society or their country or their educational system or their business system values that more than, say, we would. And I would venture that that is the main reason why there is such a vast difference in that.
Just to follow up, yes. I'm sure you're right. I'm a strong proponent of our sending our kids to other countries, having that experience when we can as well. Just to echo Rep. Maurer's point, I think I'm probably amazingly in the same place as he is yet again this week. I think that this is something that we really need to have a conversation about. In the meantime, I think we need to protect it, make sure that we're not causing harm when we don't need to. But I think we really should look at this, because if we're going to have a situation where half or more than half of the kids in the district are from out of the country, I just think we have to be very thoughtful about that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Harker.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Representative Dembro has jogged loose a very fuzzy memory in the back of my brain somewhere, and I'll ask the question this way. If one of the students, a local student from Mitchell, were to go abroad, would they still be considered a resident of Mitchell during that time?
Madam Chair, Representative Harker, I'm assuming you're asking the question, would they be considered a resident for purposes of distribution of state school fund dollars? No, they would not. The school district, when that student exits the school district, whether they're going to another school district or they're going to study abroad a year,
mm-hmm.
they don't claim that student under the ADMW counts.
Nope, can't.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Morgan Allen, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Ed, and I'm here to advocate for Section 6 of the bill, which is a fix to Representative Van Orman's, a technical fix to House Bill 3041, which we worked with Representative Van Orman on during the last session, to create a pilot program for medical and health literacy program for Head Start parents. It's part through Johnson & Johnson and UCLA. And when we wrote the bill, we inadvertently left out the words Oregon pre-kindergarten program providers. Because as you know, in Oregon, we have both federally funded Head Start programs and OPK, or Oregon pre-kindergarten, and we have blended programs. And so we want to make sure that when we have some funds, and we have raised a few thousand dollars for the program, and we continue to try to raise some more money from private donors, but when we get some more money and are ready to put this out, that any Head Start provider in Oregon could be part of the pilot and be competitive to receive any funds that we might have. So very technical fix, and I would appreciate the bill moving along. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Morgan?
Just for the record, I'm still trying to raise money.
Thank you, Representative Van Orman. I'm going to close the public hearing on... Is there anybody else that wants to be heard on 988? Seeing nobody, I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 988.
It's a housekeeping bill of magnitude.
I'd like to open our work session on Senate Bill 988. So I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 988. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank you for your commitment to the committee policy about allowing members to introduce amendments. I will be brief. I have an amendment. I don't know what dash it is, but it's one of those. And it goes back to what we talked about a week or so ago about, and correct me if I don't characterize this exactly right, but if I remember right, in previous legislation, we disallowed the Board of Education the opportunity to visit with one of the online providers regarding a waiver. Is that characterized?
We put a two-year hold on that, that there would be no further waivers during this two-year period.
Right. Thank you. And so we're talking about the near-term window on that.
Thank you.
So my amendment to SB 988 would allow the Board of Education to have the conversation with BORVA, and it does nothing more than allow the conversation with the Board of Education and ORVA to add ninth grade to their lineup of educational opportunities, in light of the fact that they have always been K-8, but they would like to add ninth grade, and they'd just like to be able to have that conversation. They've got 80 graduating eighth graders in round figures, and there has been apparently some new information that you may have on Orca, which is another online provider. It's not ORVA, so it's, you know, if the kids were allowed to transfer over to Orca, if that was their choice, it's different. So it's, you know, online providers or not online providers or not online providers. So anyway, my amendment would just allow that conversation between ORVA and the Board of Education.
Thank you very much. So did you make that motion?
And everything that I just said was in the form of a motion.
Except for that you didn't have an amendment number. So
I said it was a dash something, Madam Chair.
So Representative Huffman moves the dash something amendment.
Dash
814, Madam Chair. That motion was in the form of a dash A14 amendment.
Thank you very much.
Which would allow the Board of Education the opportunity to have the conversation with ORVA regarding addition of 98.
Madam Chair, can we have some order in this committee?
No, I believe in disorder.
You're late.
Disorderly conduct.
Okay.
We qualify.
Is there any further discussion? Being none. Bonnie, would you call the roll on the... Is there... Okay, Bonnie, would you please call the roll? On the amendment?
Representative Parker?
No.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative Kahn?
Excused.
Representative Maurer?
Yes.
Representative Roblin?
Excused.
Representative Thatcher?
Yes.
Representative Van Orman?
No.
Vice Chair Springer?
Yes.
Vice Chair Dembro?
No.
Chair Gelser?
No. Having failed to receive the required majority, the motion fails. Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 988 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
So Representative Dembro moves Senate Bill 988 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Can we stand at ease for a moment, please? Do I have to... We're going to recess for about 2 minutes.
little just popped in.
Representative Huffman.
Get back.
Be careful, or I'll give you a new name, too. Okay? Oh, we were already on. Okay, the House Committee on Education will come back to order. As if we've ever had any order to start with. Bonnie, would you please call the roll on Senate Bill 988? Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kalm? Excused. Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Roblin? Excused. Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dembro?
Aye.
Aye. Having received the required votes, the motion passes, and Senate Bill 988A heads to the floor. Representative Dembro, would you carry this one?
Sure.
Representative Dembro will carry, and with that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 988. And colleagues, on Monday, we are having an informational hearing, an update on higher education capital construction. It's a little change of pace. Be very exciting, community colleges and the OUS system. And on Wednesday, Mr. King from the All Prep Academy is going to come and talk to us about his program. And by Friday, maybe we'll be visiting our kids in their schools.
Yes.
With that, I will.
What academy?
Well, that's Representative.
If you don't need me, it's okay. I'm fine.
Okay.
Someone came and got me things.
You ran, didn't you?
I did.
Well, you're here. Let you vote.
Okay.
Representative Dembro, I'm going to reopen a work session on Senate Bill 988.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we suspend the rules in order to allow Representative Roblin to vote on Senate Bill 988.
Yeah, Representative Dembro moves to suspend the rules so that Representative Roblin may vote on Senate Bill 988. Is there any objection?
Well, do I get to make a comment or anything?
No.
What about the amendment?
Is there an objection?
Well, it depends on how long.
It's going to talk, yeah.
Seeing none. Representative Roblin, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Roblin votes aye. The motion still passes. The bill still goes to the floor. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 988. Thank you all very much. The House Committee on Education is adjourned.
All right. Happy weekend.